You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Gerislein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerislein, very excited to be with you for the next 1 hour. Outdoor News, of course, has a booth out at the State Fair. I hope you come out and visit us, corner of Judson and Nelson. Tim Lesmeister here to help me kick off the show. We've been posting quite a few pictures of our booth on Facebook. And I had one comment this morning, Tim, someone said, where's your booth located now? And I tried to politely say it's been in the same spot for probably a quarter century. I'm right behind the DNR stage. Please stop out and visit, pick up a free copy, or we'd love to get you to subscribe to Outdoor News and put it in your mailbox or in your phone or your tablet or your laptop, whatever you want, every week. Tim, it's nice to see you, and I hope the first week of September is treating you well.
It is, and I'll tell you, that location that you guys have at the State Fair is like a primo spot, because the Department of Natural Resources actually does put together a good show out there. They get a lot of people that come through there. It's kind of like a nice, great, big area that's got a lot of great displays. And you guys are on the tail end of receiving everybody that comes in and out of there, so it's really, really a sweet spot.
Yeah, there's the pond, of course, with the fish. They've got a fire tower. It's a good chunk of real estate that the DNR occupies at that fair. And real estate at the fairgrounds is highly coveted, right? There's all sorts of folks that want to sell you something deep fried on a stick that can make a ton of money. I appreciate that the fair board still has that big chunk of ground for the DNR booth.
And it's starting to cool off up here in the North Country, so I can just imagine that it's a couple weeks away from seeing a few of the leaves starting to change colors. And with that, we're going to see some major transitions in where the salmon start to come in shallow, where the lake trout start to hover over the rocks. The pike will be slipping out of that deep water into the shallow water. This is when I start thinking muskellunge. I'm going to start getting out my musky gear here. And as the water cools, the fishing should get real good. And just about every hunting season is right around the corner. If you guys aren't out there with your bows tuning up, you better start now.
Well, of course, the bear season is underway in Minnesota. That started on Tuesday the 1st. Pretty dry out there across most of the bear range. It sounded like a lot of the berries dried up. Sounded like a pretty good nut and mast year. We had Andrew Tryon last week from the DNR talking about the season. He was pretty optimistic that it's going to be at least an average year, and I think that's probably a pretty good estimate. You know, that bear season gets going a little later in Wisconsin. Doesn't start till this Wednesday the 9th. Of course, it's a little different animal over there. They can run bears with hounds in part of the state, and I'm not sure that they can do that right out of the gate. I think maybe the bear hunting, the hound hunting gets going a little later. I'm not positive about that, but yeah, bear hunting across the region and bear populations, you know, increasing slowly, and bear hunting getting more popular, it seems like, every year, especially in Minnesota and probably in Wisconsin too.
Your tip of the week in this week's print edition was from Jim Wallner. He's from Fall River Outfitters up in Grand Marais. And he says that many a bear has been given freedom because of the cell phone. Yeah. He says.
Probably some deer too, huh?
Oh, I can imagine deer too. He says that when you get out to your blind, your stand, wherever you're at, you take that cell phone and turn it off. He said one of the things that people do, not only is it the potential for a ring that will send those animals hightailing it into the next county. You've got a situation there where people start actually playing games on their phone where they're doing like a Tetris or some Texas Hold'em or something like that. And these animals walk right past them. And I've actually seen that happen.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Drieson and Tim Lesmeister kicking off this week's broadcast. We should probably devote the rest of this segment to talking about the federal duck numbers that came out on Tuesday. We got them in the print version of this week's Outdoor News, so you can read all about it in that free copy you pick up at the State Fair. Or again, we immediately posted it at OutdoorNews.com. More bad news, Tim, I guess would be the way to put it, in terms of our federal duck numbers, continental duck numbers, duck factory numbers. Mallards were down again. Mallards, I think, are as low as they've been since like 1993. What really twerked me about all this was we already know the season package for this year. It's another liberal season, six ducks, 60 days. We really were hearing rumors going into this announcement that the feds might tell everyone we're looking at a moderate season for 2027. That would have been the first moderate season since 1996. Now, I guess it still could be. The feds did not declare what kind of package they're going to go for next year, Tim. But I mean, you know, it's really late. We didn't even get the numbers till the 1st of September. We used to get those numbers, I don't know, back in July. It's just taking longer and longer to find out what's happening in the Prairie Pothole region every spring. You know, these are spring breeding counts, Tim. This is not, you know, some new fall flight number. But the feds holding off on telling us what they're going to do for next year's frameworks, I think one of two things are going to happen to them. Either they're just going to go with a liberal season again, like they do every year, and you and I can rant about that a little bit more, or they're going to wait until after the election, because everything is political now. And there's part of me that wonders that if they're going to go for this moderate season strategy, someone in the administration said, oh, we're not going to tell the voters about that. We're not going to tell them we're going to restrict harvest until after the midterms. I'm getting incredibly cynical, Tim. I understand that. But I honestly think that might be what's in play here.
I agree with you. I think that we're definitely creating a lot of regulations right now based on voter satisfaction. And there's a lot of duck hunters out there. And if you start going after license fee increases, which isn't, you know, a part of the plan, but when you do that kind of stuff, then you really start alienate people. And in this case, it would be duck numbers and how many ducks you can take during the season. And people don't like change. People hate change. And I think it's just real easy for those that are creating these regulations to just say, you know what, let's just leave it alone. Just maintain status quo because it's easy. And people won't get mad because we're not changing anything. But yeah, the duck numbers are down. These drought conditions and just a lot of other habitat destruction scenarios have put us in a position where we don't have as many ducks. And in a situation like that, you really need to look at that and say, what can we do to protect the ones that we have? And they're not doing that at all.
What's frustrating is that it doesn't seem like anyone wants to take responsibility for the bad reports we get year over year over year on waterfowl. The total breeding population of ducks in the traditional survey area estimated at 33.4 million, a 2% decline from last year, 6% below the long-term average. Now, back in the day when we saw duck numbers kind of declining, and we would say, why are we still holding liberal seasons? The feds would always march out mallards for us. And they'd say, well, mallards are the bread and butter bird that we really base all of adaptive harvest management on. And mallards are doing great. Well, mallards aren't doing great anymore. And we've talked about this for several years running. Mallards, North America's most abundant duck, are estimated at 5.9 million, 11% below last year. So that's a double-digit drop just in 1 year, and 26% below the long-term average. The mallard breeding population is the lowest since 1993. It was as high as almost 11 million in 2014. So by my count, that's not half. That's at least a 40% drop since their peak in 2014, when I'm sure the feds were more than happy to proclaim that, you know, we were up to our armpits in mallards. They were at an all-time high. I don't know, Tim, do you think there's any chance the feds are going to go with a moderate season strategy for next year, or we're just going to keep marching ahead with these liberal hunts? Because the logic is there's not enough guns in the marsh to really, really impact duck numbers that much. A moderate season, by the way, would probably be 45 days and six birds. It would probably be the same bag, but it would be fewer days.
Yeah, I think it would be. And who knows? They might drop the bag limit to four. You never can tell. That might not be a bad thing. It might be a great thing, but I don't think they're going to do anything. I tend to side with you on this as far as every year seems to be an election year now, and everything revolves around that. And sportsmen do have some clout in certain parts of the country. And
yeah, especially down south. Yeah.
Oh, boy, down south, you start messing with their ability to kill things, and you're barking up the wrong tree there. So I got a feeling that we're going to see a lot of regulations and a lot of things happen that are going to probably not be great for the resources that we value just because they think it's going to cost them boats.
Let's grab a break. We'll circle back with you later in the show.
I'll be here.
Tim Lesmeister and Rob Gerisline, you're listening to Outdoor News Radio.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Great hunting dogs deserve great nutrition. That's why Kinetic Performance Dog Food and Outdoor News have teamed up for the annual Hunt and Buddy Photo Contest. Developed for military and police canines, Kinetic helps fuel the energy, endurance, and recovery of hunting dogs and active companions. Now show us your best hunting buddy for a chance to win a year's supply of Kinetic Performance Dog Food. Enter by August 28th at OutdoorNews.com.
Fall is coming, so waterfowlers, listen up. When birds are cupped over the spread, the last thing you need is a misfire. The Rite Aces patented Inertia Plus system guarantees full bolt closure every single time. It handles light loads through 3.5-inch magnums with oversized controls for cold weather gloves, and its airy recoil pad reduces felt recoil up to 30%. Get elite performance and a lifetime warranty without the $2,000 price tag. Visit your dealer or RiteUSA.com today.
There are a ton of social networking websites, but one stands apart for a very special reason. This one saves lives. It's MatchingDonors.com. MatchingDonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. If you've ever considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you have someone in need of an organ transplant, visit MatchingDonors.com. Home of the greatest gift of all, the gift of life. MatchingDonors.com.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit FamilyForestCarbon.org and enroll today.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, Ducks Unlimited has been protecting and restoring critical habitat for nearly 90 years. We're working toward our next million-acre milestone, and we need your help. Whether you're great at selling event tickets, securing donations, lining up sponsors, or pitching in wherever, there's a role for everyone. Join the team that's making a real difference. Head to ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
Everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you like the broadcast. If so, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or give us a call at 800-535-5191. Also, we've got a booth out at the State Fair. Drop in and say hi to us out there. I want to devote this segment to talk about a really cool feature I saw on the website of our friends with Onyx. It's the Public Lands Comment Hub. And here to talk to us about that is Becky Marceliano. She is the Senior Brand Manager of Advocacy for Onyx. She's based out in the Salt Lake City area, and she joins us now. Becky, thanks so much for carving out some time to chat with us. It's good to see you.
It's great to see you too, Rob. Thanks so much for having us on the show today.
Well, Onyx is one of the strongest brands on the outdoor scene these days. They've been a great friend of Outdoor News. I see their logo everywhere. You and I were talking a little bit off air that we had the new waterfowl numbers from the Fish and Wildlife Service, and I got a great graphic from Ducks Unlimited, and there at the bottom it said, sponsored by Onyx. You folks are ubiquitous and having a lot of success out there. Give folks a real brief rundown. What is Onyx? What are you all about before we talk about the public land comment hub?
Yeah, thank you. So Onyx is a digital navigation company that was founded in Montana in 2009. Our company builds mapping and navigation software for people who spend time outside. And our core products are four apps. We have the Onyx Hunt app, Onyx Off-Road, Onyx Backcountry, and Onyx Fish Midwest. Each are built for a different type of outdoor pursuit, but really sharing the same core idea. And that's to give people reliable, detailed information about the land and water that they're moving through, including public and private land boundaries, ownership, terrain information, trail technicality, and lots more so that they can recreate confidently and legally out there. And then beyond the apps, I help Onyx run our access and stewardship program because we believe as a company that our responsibility extends beyond just building good maps. We want to make sure that we're doing our part to protect the places that we love too. The Public Land Comment Hub really relies heavily on our geospatial mapping expertise, but the concept for it came from the work that our access and stewardship program does.
So there's all sorts of federal issues brewing these days. We're reporting on it constantly here at Outdoor News. I'm always urging my readers to chime in, to comment on these different things. What was Onyx trying to solve with this Public Land Comment Hub? Trying to kind of coach people up a little bit in terms of how to go about filing a comment, however they might feel about an issue?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The real problem that we were trying to solve for was discoverability. NEPA and related laws determine when and how federal land management agencies must conduct public scoping, but that information is really scattered across numerous government websites. It's delivered in text-heavy notices, inconsistent formats. It's pretty dense. So in order to find a proposal about a public land management, somebody would have to already really know what they're looking for, including when it was published and which specific keywords to use to find it. So Onyx built the Public Land Comment Hub to pull all active federal public comment periods into one interactive map and dashboard so that people can see what's happening on land that they care about and then click through to go directly to the right page to comment. So it really simplifies this complex process as we've done the heavy lifting on that discoverability of public input opportunities. And then we serve them up in one centralized landing page. And that makes participation just so much more approachable for our customers. Also to note, writing a substantive comment still requires really reading the official documents to understand what's being proposed. Our goal was to make more people aware that these opportunities are open and show which areas are impacted on the map and then help them get to that right information quickly.
And Becky, are folks going to see proposals and opportunities to comment from almost all of the federal agencies that affect natural resources across the country?
The hub covers proposals and comment periods across four federal agencies: the Bureau of Land Management, the U.S. Forest Service, National Park Service, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. These agencies determine things like which roads and trails are open to which vehicles and when, energy leasing, livestock grazing terms, land designations like monuments and wilderness study areas, and commercial outfitter and special use permits. So much of this, again, is happening within that NEPA framework, which is what requires the public scoping and comment process in the first place. So we pulled in all public comments from those four main federal agencies to start with, at least.
Well, those are the four big ones, so I'm glad you've got those covered. You listen to Outdoor News Radio. We're talking with Becky Marceliano from Onyx. She's the Senior Brand Manager of Advocacy, and we're talking about a new feature on the Onyx website, the Public Land Comment Hub. Tell us how someone would approach this, practically speaking. How does the hub help someone who has got no experience making a public comment? They go to this hub. How is it going to coach them up? How is it going to help them?
Yeah, so you open the hub in a web browser. This tool is not inside of our apps and it doesn't require an Onyx account login. We did that intentionally. Mm-hmm. So on that page, you'll see a map with color-coded areas on places showing active public comment periods, and you can zoom in into that land that you know, tap or click on an area and really explore. And then a pop-up will show a summary of what's being proposed, which agency is involved, and when the comment period closes. There's also a list of agency-wide proposals below the map, since those apply broadly rather than to just one location on the map. So we have that map and then that dashboard below. And from there, you can click on a button that says comment now, and that takes you straight to the official government portal to submit your comment.
Like I mentioned at the start of our chat, Becky, there's a lot going on. It seems like in the news business, every few days or almost every day, there's something new that we're posting on our website, some new alert, something that folks need to monitor. How does Onyx locate and, you know, collect all these comment periods? It must be a big job. You've got, I don't know how many people you have working on this, but how often are you updating the site with, you know, as proposals open or change?
So the map and the dashboard are updated daily as comment periods open and close so that the information on the hub stays current. So it really is that kind of live time feed that you're seeing. It is a complex process to have built this out. We have really two people that were working on this, but it wasn't their full-time job. It did take a lot of months and, you know, we kind of started and then we let it sit for a minute and we picked it back up. But it was a lot of months in the making. It was definitely a complex project. We're pulling in information from, I believe it's 9 different sources that we're pulling information in. So it's not just kind of this one website database per each of those 4 agencies that I mentioned. There's a little bit more to it than that. There's also a lot of really fancy geospatial coding and tiling and presentation work that happens to build all of that information into the one system that it is today that we built. And then as well as like the actual map build, the cartography work that goes into bringing to life that interactive map UX that you see on that the front end of the hub landing page. So it definitely took a lot of different skill sets to bring that whole thing to life.
Becky, I'm wondering if you can give listeners a little bit of advice on how to actually, you know, go about, you know, crafting their comment or their letter. You know, A, should they file early? Do you think that matters? And B, you know, should their letter be, you know, really from scratch, not like a form letter, not crafted by AI? And any thoughts on how people actually go ahead and write the comment?
Form letters can serve as a true signal of collective public opinion and interest. But sometimes that exact same letter, even if say 500 or 500,000 people submitted it, it can be counted as just one unique letter, or sometimes it can even be tossed out. So even when you're writing in via a letter, a form letter that your favorite organization has prepared, it is still ideal that you put your own thoughts into it so that it's not just exactly the same. So that's one thing that I'll add. And then so the strongest comments are really specific to the proposal or the area under review, rather than a general opinion about the agency or a broad policy matter. They're referencing the plan by name with page numbers or map coordinates. They present real on the ground knowledge or research or experience and reasoning rather than just a I believe in this or I don't believe in this or a yes or a no. So it's really most useful when it raises a point that the agency can actually act on or respond to. Like maybe you're pointing out a blind spot in their analysis or an unconsidered impact or how it might, you know, influence you as say an outfitter in the area. Like that is real tangible experience that you can offer to the conversation. And then the last thing, of course, it needs to be submitted on time.
Becky, how is it going so far? How long has the hub been up? Have you had a lot of people accessing and using it?
Yeah, it's early days for the hub itself. And because we don't intentionally track what happens after somebody submits those comments directly through the agency's own portal, it's tough for us to directly attribute a specific outcome to the tool directly. But we have seen recently just how much public comments in general can matter. For example, this summer with the wetland protection rule in the Prairie Pothole region, which you're familiar with, of course. I mean, that drew more than 200,000 comments in just a couple weeks. So, and that was a big win. The agency held off on weakening those protections. So that's the kind of impact that we want more people to be able to participate. And we really are seeing a listening ear on the other side of that, which has just been really stellar to see. The other major win that I will call out is that for the hub directly. All our partners from across all user groups and our customers from across all user groups are really loving it. They are telling us that it's been helpful. And so at this point, that is qualitative data that we can lean on to really, you know, call this a win. And then we'll continue to build it out from there. More long term, we'd love for this tool to be something people bookmark and they come back to time and time again to see what opportunities they can participate in, and we'll be able to see kind of long term marketing metrics and web traffic and hub engagement metrics that we can, you know, kind of benchmark against now. And in a year from now, you know, how has that grown and spiked over time? I think will be really interesting.
I got to think this roadless rule is generating a lot of traffic for the hub as well, of course, for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. What's the best way for people to access this? Google Onyx Public Land Comment Hub or go to onyxmaps.com. How can they navigate there?
Yeah, I think just Googling it will pop right up. So it'll be found there. Just Google Onyx Public Land Comment Hub and it'll pop right up for you.
Well, I really appreciate what Onyx is doing here, Becky. I tip my hat to you folks, you know, investing in this, trying to help the public to engage on these important issues, making that process easier for folks, because it is intimidating for a lot of rank and file citizens, going to regulations.gov and trying to find a docket number and that sort of thing. And if this helps make that process easier, I thank you very much for doing that. It's the Onyx Public Land Comment Hub. Becky, thanks for all you do.
Thank you so much for the time today, Rob, to spotlight this new tool. It's something that we are really proud of, and we're excited to get it out to the public to really encourage those comments to keep on coming. So thanks so much.
Perfect. Thank you for everything, Becky, and have a great fall.
Thank you.
That was Becky Marceliano. She is from Onyx, a senior brand manager of advocacy. We were talking about Onyx's new Public Land Comment Hub. Check that out. Just Google it up. With that, let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
You're out here to catch fish, not chase eggs and milk around the woods. Chef Robert's Gourmet Breading Mix is built for the outdoors. One step, no mess, no fuss. Just wet it, bread it, fry it, and get ready for the crunch that legends are made of. Grab a 12-ounce resealable bag and feed the whole crew. Fish, chicken, turkey, duck, and more. Find Chef Roberts at chefroberts.com. That's chefroberts.com. And never miss a bite.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited, conservation for a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Great hunting dogs deserve great nutrition. That's why Kinetic Performance Dog Food and Outdoor News have teamed up for the annual Huntin' Buddy Photo Contest. Developed for military and police canines, Kinetic helps fuel the energy, endurance, and recovery of hunting dogs and active companions. Now show us your best hunting buddy for a chance to win a year's supply of Kinetic Performance dog food. Enter by August 28th at OutdoorNews.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob DeReesline with you for another segment. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you like the content here. If so, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 or visit us out at the State Fair, big booth right behind the corner of Judson and Nelson, actually right behind that DNR stage. Get a free cap if you subscribe out at the fair. A gentleman joins me now. I haven't talked to him since July of last year. That's maybe in part because we didn't get the federal duck numbers until this past week, but his name is John Devaney. He's the chief policy officer for Bismarck-based Delta Waterfowl. He's a longtime friend of mine in this program, and it's good to see you, John. Thanks a lot for spending a few minutes with me here.
You bet, Rob. Just glad we're not doing it at the fair. I don't smell like a corn dog this way.
Well, you're a Twin Cities guy originally.
Lots of time at the fair.
No doubt. John, of course, Delta Waterfowl, one of our greatest nonprofits that focuses on waterfowl and waterfowl habitat here in North America. We always anticipate the waterfowl status report from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We used to get it midsummer, it seems like. We got it pretty late this year. Do you have any idea why it came so late here in 2026?
You know, Rob, if we go back, and it's you and I are both getting a lot older. And remember, in the good old days, it used to come right around the 4th of July.
Right.
Of course, in the good old days, we used to get the survey results, assimilate them into the status report, and then immediately going into setting regulations for that coming duck season.
Yep.
So, of course, we do it differently now. So we're using the data that was just collected by the Fish and Wildlife Service, Canadian Wildlife Service, that we just received here this week, will inform next duck season.
So that AHM report is available. And what's it going to be? Another liberal season?
Be liberal again. Yep.
Okay. All right. Does that surprise you? Given we haven't talked about the results here yet, John. I mean, overall duck numbers down 2%. Total duck population here in the duck factory, 33.4 million, 6% below the long-term average. Mallards way down, the lowest that they've been since 1993. And those are our bread and butter bird that a lot of adaptive harvest management is kind of built upon.
Yeah.
So, I mean, given that data, you know, and the fact that what are we running here? 32 straight years with a liberal season then?
Holy cow, Rob. When you frame it that way, it makes me feel even older than I just described.
I think the last 95. Non-liberal was 95, 96, somewhere in there.
So 95. I can't do math that quick. But yeah, it's been a long 31 years.
Given all that data and as low as some things are, does it surprise you that we're still looking at a liberal hunt probably next year?
Help is I went and looked at the AHM report when it came out and said, how close were we? Right. I mean, you start for the benefit of your listeners, you and I know this stuff probably more than your average listener does, that the adaptive harvest management model that we use to set regulations in the Mississippi and Central Flyway uses three inputs. So it's the mallard breeding population estimate, the traditional survey area. So Eastern Dakotas, Montana, Prairie Canada, boreal up into Alaska. It uses total May ponds now. And that's a relatively new change too, Rob. It used to just use Canadian May ponds. Now it uses total May ponds in both the US and Canada. And then it includes the mallards from Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin to create essentially a mid-continent mallard population overlaid with a mid-continent habitat indices with May ponds. If there's any good news in the survey, this year is May ponds came up a little bit. They're still below the long-term average. It's hardly sunny by any stretch of imagination, but May ponds came up a little bit.
At least in Canada, right?
The increase was in Canada. There was actually a decrease in the U.S. side, but Canada, finally, the drought seems to have relented a little bit up there, which is certainly good news. But when you put those three things together, you know, mallard populations in Minnesota, Rob, as I'm sure you guys reported on,
have
not bad. Same with Wisconsin and Michigan. And so there's just enough stability in that mallard population with a little bit of a bump in May ponds. We're getting on the lower end of the spectrum for liberal seasons.
I would think so, yeah.
But there were still a couple boxes between us and a more restrictive regulation package.
For folks sitting in the Twin Cities or most of Minnesota where, you know, we know it's dry. We see it here. How dry is it out there in duck country, duck factory country, where you're sitting, John? I'm guessing pretty darn dry.
It's terrible dry right now, but it's been a really strange year, Rob. Had you asked me, you know, when we were driving around, looking around, maybe doing some spring snow goose hunting, right when the thaw happened, it looked really good. And then we got into a very oddly warm, dry, windy pattern. It went from looking really good to really pretty crummy. And then it got wet again in mid-May, and it was really quite wet from, say, the second week of May through to the 4th of July. And since the 4th of July, at least in most parts of the eastern Dakotas, now there's certainly places that have been quite wet and had really nice rains, but most of it has gotten really bloody dry. So we started pretty good. We got dry again. Then we got wet again. That sustained up till about the 4th of July, and then it's been damn dry ever since.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline. We're chatting with John Devney. He is the Senior Policy Officer for Bismarck, North Dakota-based Delta Waterfowl. We're talking about the 2026 Waterfowl Status Report that popped here this past week from the feds and what it means for duck hunting and duck populations across the region. John, you're looking at some of the data. We had mallards down. We already talked about that. Blue-winged teal, I believe, at least across the region at their lowest levels ever. Pintails down, I think, the most in terms of percentage, probably not the most in terms of numbers of ducks. And yet some of the divers, scaup, canvasbacks, and redheads.
Redheads were unchanged.
Yeah, were, and cans and scaup were actually up a little bit. Now, I know, the number of those birds total is much smaller. So when you talk about a 13% increase, it's not a big number. Nonetheless, clearly kind of a delineation between the divers and the puddle ducks. What do you think is going on there?
I think, look at canvasbacks. We talked just a minute ago about how wetland conditions improved in Prairie Canada. You go to a place like southwestern Manitoba, has southeastern Saskatchewan too, that have the highest breeding densities of cans anywhere in North America. Those areas are the areas that probably had the best wetland conditions this year. So cans went back and found pretty favorable conditions in the core of their historic breeding range. The scaup thing looked to me to be more of a northern story than a prairie or parkland story, Rob. The eastern Dakotas, which for a long, long time, sort of quietly without a lot of people paying attention to it, became a really important breeding area for lesser scaup. That's sort of fallen apart a little bit here over the last 8 or 9 years. So the scaup story isn't what it was sort of in the late 90s, 2000s through, the mid 20-teens. It looks like we found most of those scaup in more boreal and northern breeding areas.
John, we got, a press release from the Fish and Wildlife Service or Department of Interior saying a new quote-unquote streamlined process has been put together to authorize seasons for migratory bird hunting. I think it used terms like less red tape, more efficiencies. I get a little nervous sometimes when I see things like that. I want to make sure we're dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
Yeah.
Talk me off the ledge there. Are you comfortable with this streamlined process, John?
I think a bunch of our colleagues in the states and the flyways, this has been talked about. I think where the service got to was a good place. I will say, I think a lot of us had concerns about it in the journey leading up to this, Rob.
Okay.
I think the primary concern most of us have is not use efficiency or cutting regulatory red tape as a means to reduce the annual surveys and monitoring programs we rely on to make good decisions.
We need the data. Yeah.
We need the data. And it's one of the things that Duck World does better than anybody else, and we shouldn't give it away. And what I was really pleased to see when the service communicated finally those changes, they were, I think, heard from all of us that said, we're not changing the way we're monitoring populations, at least in terms of the commitment to do those annual monitoring programs. So it is a big cumbersome process, Rob, when you need the Secretary of Interior to sign off on something like this. it does create a lot of opportunities for log jams. We've seen that play out in the past. And setting a framework, but then providing the annual flexibility to respond to the information that you're collecting and make decisions one way or the other, I think is where the Fish and Wildlife Service landed, and it's a pretty good spot. But again, I think all of us as duck hunters, we don't want to ever see the service get so efficient that we're taking away annual monitoring programs.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. John, I got to wrap it up, but let's encapsulate all this. What does this report mean for duck hunters this fall?
There's not a lot of great news in the survey, Rob. I think one of the things that I will say is I think, remember, as duck hunters, we don't shoot the breeding population, we shoot the fall flight. And that means what we really rely on as duck hunters is how many juveniles those adults are producing. I think there are going to be pockets this year where production is considerably better than it was a year ago. Yeah. I don't know if it's enough to overwhelm the low breeding population. But again, I think, you know, parts of South Dakota, parts of North Dakota, North Dakota Game and Fish's brood survey was considerably better than it was a year ago. That may be a moment for optimism. Having Prairie Canada come out of the drought certainly helps, and hopefully some of those areas will switch on from a production perspective.
Yeah, and as we reported in Minnesota anyway, there's some mallards and there's some blue-winged teal down here too. So there's some a little cause for optimism here and there. John, thanks a lot for joining me again. It's always fun to chat with you, and you always talk me off the ledge every year after I get this report. I appreciate that. Good luck to you the rest of the summer, and good luck waterfowl hunting this fall, my friend.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on, Rob.
John Devney, Senior Policy Officer for Bismarck, North Dakota-based Delta Waterfowl. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Fall is coming, so waterfowlers, listen up. When birds are cupped over the spread, the last thing you need is a misfire. The Retay Ace's patented Inertia Plus system guarantees full bolt closure every single time. It handles light loads through 3.5-inch magnums with oversized controls for cold weather gloves, and its airy recoil pad reduces felt recoil up to 30%. Get elite performance and a lifetime warranty without the $2,000 price tag. Visit your dealer or RetayUSA.com today.
Sulfide ore copper mining threatens the health of the nation's most popular wilderness, the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, right here in Minnesota. You can help keep the BWCA clean. Join Sportsmen for the Boundary Waters, pledge to protect the integrity of this incredible wilderness and its watersheds for hunting and fishing, for clean water, and for future generations. Join other hunters and anglers in demanding permanent protection of this national treasure. Visit sportsmenbwca.org to learn more about the threats to the Boundary Waters.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Minnesota's DNR conservation officers
and state patrol troopers are on the road
and the water working to keep you safe from drunk boaters
and drunk drivers. Each year in Minnesota,
over 30% of fatal boating accidents involve alcohol.
And over 30% of deadly crashes are caused by drunk drivers.
Drunk boating
is drunk driving.
And Minnesota has zero tolerance
for either one. Don't drink and drive.
Don't drink and boat.
As farmers and ranchers, stewardship of the land comes naturally. You help keep water clean, improve the soil, and provide habitat for wildlife. But did you know conservation can also improve your bottom line? Learn more at conservationpays.org.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Jerisline with you for our final segment of this week's broadcast. Tim Westmeister is going to help me bring it home. As I mentioned earlier in the show, we have got a booth out at the State Fair, corner of Judson and Nelson. Would love to have you visit us out there. Renew your subscription. Pick up a free copy of Outdoor News if you want to see what we're all about. Of course, we have print and digital versions. Talking to the gentleman who runs the booth, he said he's getting a lot of good feedback about our digital products. More and more people are subscribing to that and using it. Tim Lesmeister joining me now. Tim, he also said he gets a ton of great feedback about the podcast. A lot of people are listening to this, and we appreciate their support. We need to figure out a way to do a live version of this so we could invite some people to check it out.
That'd be fun. I always like doing live things because all of the warts and all of those mistakes, they all come popping out as soon as you go live, and it's a lot of fun.
Tim Lesmeister, of course, originally hails from Iowa, and Tim, we got the Iowa pheasant population reports. Their August statewide pheasant survey was up from last year. By the way, we're still waiting for the Minnesota DNR versions of that. I presume we'll have it by next week. It's as late as I think we've ever gotten that one, too. I was ranting about the feds and their duck survey earlier. We're waiting not so patiently for the pheasant numbers from the state right now. But down to Iowa, the survey down there says the Iowa pheasant population was second highest in a decade. Now, the past decade hasn't been great. It doesn't begin to compare to the glory days of Iowa. But nonetheless, we'll take an upbeat forecast.
I've had three invitations to get down to Iowa and hunt with friends and relatives. My nephew, who lives in Decorah, said he's seeing more pheasants this year than he has ever seen, and he said it's going to be a banner year. He says he's tuning up his Labrador Retriever right now to get out and hunt some birds and wants me to meet up with his father, who's my brother, and he for some pheasant hunting up in that northeast Iowa region. And, of course, I get down to Cedar Rapids every year for the holidays. And my brother Patrick always gets us out for some pheasant hunting around Iowa City. And there's a lot of great area down there that he's connected with. And he said this year we're going to be able to all shoot as many birds as we need to catch up to a limit of pheasants. So I'm really thinking that the pheasant hunting in Iowa is going to be great.
And now, you know, the folks that write these press releases, whether it's state, feds, Iowa, Minnesota, I don't care. They're always a little tricky with some of their language, right? They said the August statewide pheasant survey averaged 23 birds per route, which is the second highest in more than a decade. All right, that's great. Behind only the 2025 survey, which means it was down from last year, right? You can make the case that, you know, that's the lead, that pheasant numbers are down in Iowa from a year ago. But I think both the numbers on the survey route are pretty comparable to last year, maybe down a little bit, just it's a little statistically almost insignificant. So if you had a good time hunting in Iowa last year, you're probably going to have a good time again this year. They did point out that the Iowa bobwhite quail index was down statewide by 21%. Again, they love to point out it's right at the 10-year average. You know, you got Pheasants Forever with their sister nonprofit these days, Quail Forever. They've been pushing that hard. I mean, PF, you know, it's not Pheasant Fest. It's Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. You know, you see all these press releases from PF. It's not just Pheasants Forever. It's Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. And I don't know, QF's been around a while. It's tough out there for bobwhite quail. It's tough to grow quail. I think, you know, they tend to be more of a southern bird. You don't hear about them much in Minnesota, just extreme southeast Minnesota now and then, a few in Wisconsin. I used to hear them when I was a kid, that distinctive bobwhite whistle. You grew up in Iowa. Were there a lot when you were down there as a kid, Tim?
Yes, there were. I lived for the first 28 years of my life in Iowa before coming to Minnesota. And I'm telling you, the quail hunting around Cedar Rapids was outstanding. And now you can't hardly find a bird there. If you want quail, you got to get down to where there's some habitat, which is farther south. And west, usually I get into the southwestern region of Iowa if I want quail. Fortunately, I have some connections in Missouri and Kansas, and there's still good quail hunting there, something I truly love to do. I mean, we used to have, when I was a teenager and we'd go out and actually quail hunt, target quail, we might flush coveys that were 70 or 80 birds at one time. They just keep flying, and you'd be like, where do I shoot? And you never hit anything because you just put up your gun and just start blasting. And without aiming, trust me, nothing ever drops. After a while, you get really good at targeting a specific bird or two. and you'll get a quail or two. But you don't see that at all anymore. That has just been gone for a long time.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister. We've got a few minutes left here. Yeah, a lot of hunting seasons are getting going. There was a report in Cuffs and Collars, a conservation officer helping a couple of wild racers with a stuck canoe. One guy sounds like he got out and tried to push and got even more stuck. Boy, I tell you what, Tim, it would take a lot for me to climb out of a canoe into the marsh and start pushing that canoe. Man, oh, man. I don't know. Maybe they had a lot of rice, and that's why they got bogged down.
Speaking of bogs, that's what those rice beds grow in, is these, you know, boggy bottoms. Hop out of your canoe and you're going to be about knee deep in muck. So I'd be very, very careful about getting out of my watercraft. And a stuck canoe, that must have been a pretty thick rice bed for the canoe to actually get stuck, or the whatever they were out there. Maybe they were in a, maybe it wasn't a canoe. Maybe it was a, you know, one of these like flat bottom boats or something like that. I could see where something like that might get a little jammed up. Boy, just think about that. You're out there and you're thinking, I've got a boat full of wild rice and I'm stuck. What am I going to do? Crawl out of the canoe? Nah, not me.
Tim, a couple of closing thoughts here. Martin Heinrich, Democratic senator from New Mexico, saw on social media, and then the Ely Timber Jay, Marshall Helmberger, great journalist up there in Ely, had a story about Martin Heinrich visiting the Boundary Waters. Heinrich has been a strong environmental advocate in the U.S. Congress, a real leader. I think he was one of the guys who spoke out against the Twin Metals mine when that was on the House floor. A fit dude, a hunter. I've never been to his office in D.C., but I'm told he's got some mounted animals in his office. But he came up and actually went camping in the Boundary Waters. And I always appreciate that when I see a politician show up and actually get some firsthand knowledge of an area. I think if some of the Republicans who had voted to allow that Twin Metals mine to progress, to eliminate the protected area up there, actually visit the Boundary Waters, they'd be less likely to have voted the way they did.
Oh, absolutely. My son just sent me a picture here a few days ago. He had Senator Kennedy from Louisiana in his boat on the Kenai River in Alaska. And, you know, they didn't talk any politics. They just talked fishing. But you can see that some of these individuals that are in office, they understand that you have to get outdoors once in a while to realize what your constituents are up to. You know what I mean? It's a great thing that they do this. And to get somebody up into the Boundary Waters to really feel it and not just read about it.
And finally, Tim, we have a guy who beat his own catch and release state record bowfin. You got to be really into dogfish to go out and try to top your own personal record, huh?
Dogfish are great fun to catch. And this guy's fishing up in Bemidji. His name is Ben Erb, and he's fishing the Mississippi River, and he caught a 31.5-inch dogfish to beat that record he had of 30 inches, and he targets them. And I would, too. I guess if I was in an area where the dogfish were prevalent, I'd target them, too. They hit hard. They fight really hard. I mean, amazingly strong.
Will they hit the same stuff that, like, a pike will hit?
They'll hit anything you throw out there. They're a very aggressive fish. I just really appreciate dogfish, and I think they're a native species. So I think it's great that this guy's out there at physically targeting that species, because I think that they're tough.
Yeah, well, fun story. Check that out in this week's print version of Outdoor News. Well, Tim, thanks for catching up. We'll talk to you in 7 days.
Sounds good. We'll catch up to you soon.
Thank you to Tim, all of our other guests, and all the listeners who have joined us. We'll see you out at the State Fair. I'm Rob Gerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.